And now, a look at texting and driving. You, listening, are probably against it. Polls show up to 98% are, but the same polls show up to 40% still do it. Well, maybe like Reggie Shaw, they don't even realize they're doing it. Reggie was 19 in 2006 when he drove, texted, and killed two fathers, Jim Ferfaro and Keith O'Dell, rocket scientists who were driving together to work in Utah. It's a story that was told in an AT&T film directed by Werner Herzog and is still being told by Reggie, who spoke to us in 2012.
The thing that is the worst is that it's preventable. I could have shut my phone off. I could have set it to the side. I could have waited another 2 or 3 minutes until I was at work. It did not have to happen.
Yeah. Do you lay awake at night and try to roll it back? Do you ever, you know, try to rewind it?
Every day.
Yeah.
There's not a day that goes by that I don't regret this decision.
Yeah.
I don't wish I could go back and change what I did.
But Reggie didn't always feel that way. For over 2 years, he denied he'd been texting. At first, he didn't remember it, and then he thought he wasn't texting at the exact moment of the accident. But during a pretrial hearing 26 months after the accident, Dr. David Strayer took the stand to explain something called inattention blindness, and Reggie realized, I did it. Shortly after, he plea bargained and joined with those who've been trying to prosecute him to fight texting and driving. New York Times reporter Matt Richtel won a Pulitzer for his series on Reggie and distracted driving. He takes a deeper look at the story and the science of attention in his new book, A Deadly Wandering. Matt joins us from the studios of KQED in San Francisco. So, Matt, start as Reggie did with inattention blindness. What is that?
Yeah, I got chills even as you described it, because that moment was so powerful and singular. The short answer is inattention blindness is when we feel as if we're attending to something, but because we're actually focused on something else, the source that we're intending to focus on gets lost altogether. And in this case, Reggie told himself he was focused on driving. He was, in effect, blind going down the road, 6:30 in the morning, in the dark, in freezing rain, and two lives were lost as a result.
Because as Dr. Strayer explained, when you text, there's the moment that you text, but this reaction to being involved in a text carries on for seconds after you've done the text. You could have both hands on the wheel, eyes on the road, your mind, because our minds are slower than technology, your mind is still in the text.
I'm so glad you brought that up. It's I can give you a technical term. It's called switching costs. What it really means is that when you move from one thing to the next, it takes a moment to reorient. Now, you say to yourself, well, okay, that's just a millisecond or a few seconds.
15.
Or 15 when you come out of a text. But guess what? When you're driving a missile down the road and you have a tiny margin for error under some circumstances, every millisecond counts, and that becomes deadly.
Well, so there's this moment, again, chilling moment in this hearing when it's an aha moment for him, but he doesn't say anything at that point. Shortly after, he shows up in Utah at, I believe, the State House, and a legislator is trying to pass a ban on texting. There's a public hearing. The legislator is having a hard time because this is Utah, very conservative, and people are saying that's a big government move to ban this relatively new thing, texting. And then, like in a movie, this skinny kid gets up. It's Reggie.
I'm laughing because you can't write this. For 2.5 years, this young man has carried grief and guilt inside him and has been unwilling, bolstered by his family, to admit what he's done. There's no legal context. There's no laws on the books. Police can't prove what's happened. The prosecutors are unsure even to bring this up. And Reggie is a cauldron of guilt. He would write over and over again on pieces of paper to the families, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, but not deliver it to them because he was told by his lawyer that would be an admission of guilt.
Right.
And then the legislature brings up this bill that no one believes has any chance of passing. And the guy with the gavel says, would anybody else like to speak? And as you say, like right out of a movie, this young man gets up from the back and essentially says, you know those two rocket scientists you heard about? I'm the guy who killed them. And remarkably enough, Utah passes the toughest ban against texting and driving, at that time becoming the second state to do it after Washington. And David Strayer, the scientist who changed all of this, would later say they ought to call it Reggie's Law.
Well, he brought people to tears in that hearing room about, you know, the hell he was in that he had done this. Please don't allow texting and driving. Don't let anybody else feel the way I feel and feel the way these two families feel. So a transformative moment there. But it comes, you know, as we said, at the end of the story. Let's go back. The accident, 2006, texting new. You also tell the story of the prosecutors, the defense attorney, the victim's advocate, a woman named Terrell, the families of the two men killed. Most are furious with Reggie. They think he's an arrogant kid hiding from his role in this accident. But you also write, and this is the trouble with texting and driving, just about everybody also had thoughts of, but on the other hand, this could have been me.
Yeah. This little town in northern Utah seemed to carry with it all of the views that all of us carry, all of the sense of conflict, and it got played out on this little big stage. And in 2006, it really was a razor's edge question of law and morality, what you should do behind the wheel. But I would argue that that razor's edge question remains today in this respect. While we know that texting and driving is dangerous, there are real questions about how we should deliver our attention, how much we should give to our devices, how much they beckon to us, and what in effect was happening inside Reggie's brain, what happens when we interact with our devices, and why is the hold on us so magnetic?
Author Matt Richtel, his new book, A Deadly Wandering, looks at the fatal 2006 texting and driving crash caused by Reggie Shaw and the science of inattention behind it. Welcome back to our conversation with Matt Richtel. His new book, A Deadly Wandering, tells of the 2006 case of Reggie Shaw, who killed two men, Jim Ferfaro and Keith O'Dell, while texting and driving, or actually several seconds after texting. For 8 years, Reggie's been holding himself up as a cautionary tale. He's Mormon. Family is paramount. He told us in 2012 about his feelings having destroyed two other families.
I'm very close to my father, and you know, I think about how many times he's helped me just in the last couple of years, and how there's someone struggling that needs help from their dad, and I took that away from them. They don't have that anymore.
Matt Richtel braids Reggie's story with the stories of state officials, including one who'd killed a little boy after getting distracted on a motorcycle and feels guilty about charging Reggie. We also meet researchers like David Strayer, who study the science of distraction. We learn about the cocktail party effect. Try it. You cannot listen to two conversations at one time. We learn that we're consuming three times the information people did in 1960, that office workers get interrupted by some kind of media stimulation every 3 minutes. So, Matt Richtel, pick up there.
The lure of the device, all those interruptions are a function of the deep, deep reward systems in the brain that the device is playing to. It plays to our dopamine systems, the very systems of neurochemicals that drugs play to. It plays to our need for social information. And that itch you feel to check your device all the time isn't necessarily about substance. It may in part be the sheer mechanics of having such an interactive device in your pocket.
You compare it to monkeys who sit in front of those little lever machines where if you push the lever, something might come out. Most of the time, nothing comes out, but they still push the lever.
The scientific principle here is called intermittent reinforcement. What it means is that if you don't know when the good stuff is going to come, you check your device all the time. And it goes all the way back to B.F. Skinner and his research with rats. There were rats in cages, and they would press a lever to get food, but never know which press of the lever would bring the food. And so they'd become conditioned to press it all the time. If you'll forgive the comparison to humans, we never know which of the presses on our device is going to bring the good email, the good text, the good information. So we become conditioned to press it all the time. You would think that if our devices delivered us lots of irrelevant or non-urgent information, we'd be conditioned to press it less. Perversely, based on what I've just said, we're conditioned to press it more. The more spam, the more magnetic. It's like a slot machine. It's very habituating, even addictive.
Well, this isn't just your opinion. I mean, you've spoken to scientists. We mentioned Dr. David Strayer, but there's also Adam Ghazali. He runs the neuroimaging lab at the University of California. The accumulated science seems to go beyond addiction because, as you and others point out, Mothers Against Drunk Driving really managed to taper off how much drunk driving – it's still a problem, obviously, but it tapered off how much there is when there was awareness. But with texting, people are against it, but they admit in polling that they do it.
Yeah, about 96 to 98% of us say it's dangerous. 30 to 40% still do it. That is a massive disconnect between attitudes and behaviors. I'm not prepared to call this an addiction. However, this is at least extremely habit-forming, has addictive properties, and is being discussed in conversations about addiction. It's just that we have to be careful to not apply a clinical definition when it may not apply to it yet.
Well, what else does apply to it? I mean, there are things that are uniquely true about texting as opposed to, let's say, alcohol. And for one thing, our brains, and Reggie seemed to illustrate this, our brains can't keep up with the technology. He didn't even really know what he was doing.
Yeah, if you'll permit an analogy, picture a cave person standing in front of a fire that they've tended or made, and they get a tap on the shoulder from behind. It's impossible that the cave person would ignore the tap because the cave person doesn't know if it's opportunity or threat, maybe someone with a spear. When you're in the car and the phone rings, it's a proverbial tap on the shoulder from anyone anywhere in the world. Here's what's happening inside your brain at that moment. The part of the cave person tending to the fire is the prefrontal cortex of the brain. It dictates how we focus, how we attend to the world. It's responsible for art, architecture, civilization. But when the tap comes on the shoulder from behind or there's a roar of a lion, basically a signal gets sent from much more primitive parts of the brain that say, lion, pay attention, run or die. When the phone goes off in the car, it's a very similar mechanism, a very similar signal, and it can overtake those high-level attention systems. It is a veritable hijacking.
Well, the New York Times Book Review said your book deserves a spot next to Fast Food Nation and To Kill a Mockingbird. In high school curriculum, an entrepreneur, John Fisher, who runs a company called Tri-Safety First, has bought 575 copies, and he's having you and all the main characters sign them to give to members of Congress for holiday presents. What about Reggie? You know, part of what we see happening is that once he has the aha moment and realizes that he was blinded and didn't even realize he was texting, he became this evangelist.
Yeah.
You know, he's a young Mormon man, and he wanted so badly to go on a Mormon mission. It seems that this is his mission.
Yeah, think about it. Twice he got pulled back from missions, the second time to face negligent homicide charges. He was a wrecked person and in many ways is still a wrecked person, but he has also become arguably the single most important voice opposing texting and driving, called a hero by no less than the Secretary of Transportation. He is out on the stump. Any time anyone will ask him, on his knees, sobbing, asking, please don't become me. I've never seen a person so redemptive. No hyperbole here. I hope he's able to heal because he's given so much. And in a way, he offers us a way out ourselves because he was able to look himself in the mirror. Maybe he offers us a guiding light out as well.
Well, but you also wonder, he's in sort of a purgatory because every single time he talks about it, that accident was in 2006, every time he talks about it, he rips himself open again. He doesn't have to try to cry. He sobs, as you said, on his knees, please don't do this. And yet if he doesn't do it, he says he just can't forget these two men, Jim Ferfaro and Keith O'Dell. If he doesn't keep doing it, he lapses back into the grief at having taken their life. So he's caught.
Yeah, it makes me misty-eyed when you talk about it because you can't – the conversation after conversation, feeling his grief and his guilt, that was a lesson to me in how to take responsibility. And I'm not even sure how to feel. I can't deny Reggie his desire to help and change the world in a way that many of us would never do. The prosecutors and the judge say we've never seen anything like it. And yet I wish he would unburden himself. I wish he'd remove the cross because I believe he's done enough. But, you know, he believes as long as someone will die out there on the roads, that it's his responsibility to try.
That's Matt Richtel. He's talking about Reggie Shaw, the young man at the heart of Matt's new book, A Deadly Wandering, A Tale of Tragedy and Redemption in the Age of Attention. It's the story of a car accident caused by texting in 2006 and everything that flowed from that. Matt, thank you so much.
Thank you, Robin. It was a pleasure.
One of our listeners, David Babler, tweets, "Switch to stick shift. It's impossible to text." 44 states now have laws against texting, but some are just for new drivers. So honestly, do you text and drive despite the law and your best intentions?